Okay, everyone, welcome to Truth Hurts Radio. We've got an interesting topic here tonight. We're going to be talking about the UN and how far from it being an instrument of world peace, it's actually been intended from the very beginning and, in fact, has served as an instrument of war. This might come as a shock to some people, especially a lot of liberals who think somehow that the UN is the savior that's going to rescue us from the abuses of power of the Bush administration. But in reality, as I hope to demonstrate for you tonight, that's just what they want from you. They want you to run to the UN. Save us, UN! When that's where they wanted you all along. The intention of the UN from the beginning has been to set up a system of despotic, world, tyrannical governmental control over people around the planet. And, you know, that's one of the main reasons why this administration has been so aggressive in its abuses of power, is to push us in that direction. The UN has not been working the way they had intended it to. People have not been flocking to it and putting their trust in it as they should, or as they want them to. So they're trying to force us in that direction and get people to think that, well, as much as we don't like the UN, maybe it looks like a better alternative than to, you know, than the Bush administration. So this is where they wanted you all along. But before I get into that discussion, just a quick announcement here. Anybody who's interested in reading my books, Piercing the Fog of 9/11, or The New World Disorder, both of which are fully documented, hundreds of pages of in-depth information that proves beyond the shadow of doubt that we are living in the midst of a monstrous conspiracy for world government, and that 9/11 was, in fact, a very big part of that twisted puzzle that's leading us in that direction. You can get either of those books, plus a few more I've got posted, and there'll be more to come in coming weeks, just by calling me, by going to my Lulu webpage. Just go to lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com, and when you're there, just type in my name, Charles Giuliani, G-I-U-L-I-A-N-I, and you'll see those books come up, along with, like I said, some others I've got available. And by all means, let me know what you think. Just contact me at truthhurtsradio@aol.com, and Hurts is spelled H-E-R-T-Z, and let me know what you think. You know, if you think that I'm a little off the wall, or I'm an extremist, I'd like to hear from you, and I'd like to know why you think that. But I guarantee, after reading either of those books, Piercing the Fog of 9/11, The New World Disorder, I don't think you'll be able to argue or doubt that we are, in fact, in the middle of this monstrous, evil conspiracy for global domination. All right, guys, with no further ado, let me launch into the subject. Got a lot of ground to cover. You know, if there's enough time in 1 hour show, really, to cover all this material. I'll do the best I can. If I don't get through it all tonight, we'll certainly pick it up next week. But what I want to show you tonight, on another show, I'll go into the background of the UN, how it actually got started, who started it, and, you know, we'll be quoting from the horse's mouth, as they say, to show that, indeed, the intention of the UN and its creators from the beginning was to create a despotic system of global tyranny. But what I want to demonstrate tonight is to show that its purpose has always been to wage war. That it never had anything to do with world peace. You know, that's what they want us to believe. The UN was created so that world leaders could meet peacefully at a bargaining table instead of the battlefield, talk out their differences, and come to a consensus and do what is in the best interest of the world society as a whole. That's not the case at all. Again, as we'll see tonight, it's quite to the contrary. Understand that, guys, that from its very inception, the United Nations has been an instrument of war, and it has used U.S. military might more than that of any other nation. It's used other nations' militaries as well, but primarily the U.S., to do its dirty work for it. Between 1945 and 2002, for example, which was the first 57 years of its existence, the UN was involved in 62 wars around the world. That's more than one war per year on average. And with each one of these wars, the UN was always has always left behind so-called peacekeeping troops, or let's call them what they are, occupation forces in every country as it went along, in order, you know, to ensure that these various nations that were invaded remained compliant, you know, basically turned them into imperial outposts of their ever-expanding global empire. The U.S., of course, has been doing the same thing, building bases in every country that it invades, and but understand that most of the wars that the U.S. itself has been involved in since World War II were fought under the auspice of the U.N., with U.N. sanction. In fact, the U.S. today, guys, now maintains bases, 700 of them, as a matter of fact, in about 132 countries around the world. Think about it. 700 bases outside the U.S. in 132 countries around the world. Most Americans aren't even aware of this. What's even more scary is sometimes you tell them this and they don't seem to have any problem with that. They shrug their shoulders and say, so what, big deal. But the reality is that this country has become a global empire. And just as the Roman Empire ruled the world with an iron tyrannical fist, so is the U.S. doing it. But because of the propaganda machine in this country, they've got us believing that somehow we're doing a good thing. We're the police of the world, when in fact the United States is the biggest rogue nation on the planet. Come on, folks. It's common sense here. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. That is an absolute fact of human nature. It cannot be denied. It's like dropping an egg. When you drop an egg, it's going to break. That's a fact. It's just how it works. When you have absolute power, that absolute power corrupts absolutely. Always has, always will. Today, the United States unquestionably has the most absolute power on the planet. Therefore, just by that simple law, it is absolutely corrupt. But do I really have to demonstrate that? I mean, can you not see it at this point? I would hope no listeners here on BBS Radio would contest that. If so, hey, call up. I'd like to hear from you. But that is a fact, folks. And so the U.S., in conjunction with the U.N., they're both war partners, as I will demonstrate tonight, have been working, invading countries around the world, working together toward this goal of global domination. The U.N.'s first big blunder was the Korean War, which was deliberately prolonged, unnecessarily costing tens of thousands of lives. However, to the U.N. and those who have supported it and its twisted globalist agenda, those lives were not lost unnecessarily, as we see from these treasonous words of President Truman, for example, spoken before the U.N. General Assembly on October 24th, 1950. Here's what he said. The men who laid down their lives for the United Nations in Korea, they died in order that the United Nations might live. I hope you can see, folks, that these are absolute treasonous words spoken by a former United States president. He said they died in Korea so that the United Nations might live. Truman committed troops to fight a war for the cause of a foreign entity. And you don't get more foreign than the UN. It's foreign in many ways. Not just because it has nothing to do with the United States government. It's totally outside the U.S., even though its physical boundaries are here in the U.S. It's neutral turf. You step onto the United Nations, you're no longer under U.S. jurisdiction, folks. It's a foreign entity. But it's also foreign in its ideology. Very foreign in its ideology. I'll be doing more shows on the UN in the future demonstrating that. Its ideology comes right off the pages of the Communist Manifesto. Monstrously tyrannical and totally un-American, unconstitutional system of government, and it is a system of government. That's all it's ever intended to be. Many, many resolutions have been passed over the years that have become law in this country that most people have no idea, you know, what the origin of them are. But you start looking at some of the strange developments that have happened in this country in recent decades. Follow it, to the root. And there's the UN. Some UN resolution that had recently been passed, and bang, within a few months, usually less than a year later, they've got laws in place to reflect those rulings by the UN. Anyway, continuing on here, the Vietnam War, the other major U.S. Cold War quagmire that was deliberately dragged on and also unnecessarily cost tens of thousands of American lives, was likewise fought under the fully approving eye of the United Nations. In fact, take a look at what Section 3 of the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution had to say on this matter. This was passed, of course, through Congress by LBJ after the phony Gulf of Tonkin incident. Phony in that it was provoked. You know, they deliberately provoked the North Viet Cong to attack by launching incursions into North Vietnam. And then later, once they were attacked, they used that as an excuse. You know, look at this, we were attacked without provocation. Anyway, listen to what the resolution says here regarding the UN. It says, this resolution shall expire when the president shall determine that the peace and security of the area is reasonably assured by international conditions created by action of the United Nations. So the president will decide when the war is over according to the dictates of the United Nations. Once again, guys, we went in and invaded that country and fought that war for over a decade, deliberately just dragged on and on and on while the big Pentagon contracting companies made billions of dollars without any concern whatsoever for how many Americans died. They don't care how much money it cost, raping the public treasury. That's of no consequence to them. The more the merrier. The more the better. I mean, who can deny that the Vietnam War was a fraud, looking back with hindsight? How can anybody, I mean, even then, many Americans were aware that it was a scam, but looking back now with all that surfaced, what function did that war ever serve? How could it have served the national interest? I mean, look what a scam it was. There was just no need of it. But in their thinking, oh, it was highly necessary. They made big, fat wads of cash off of that one. And of course, look at here. We have an admission that it was done for the UN, right in the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution itself. So do you still think the UN is a peaceful entity? Well, stick around. The truth does hurt, folks. But once again, as I always say, I'll take the bitter truth over the sweet lie any day. Truth hurts, but lies kill. And they kill all the time. J. Reuben Clark, Jr., former Undersecretary of State and U.S. Ambassador to Mexico, who was also widely recognized as one of our nation's foremost international lawyers, wrote insightfully about the U.N. Charter, saying that, quote, it is a war document, not a peace document. It makes us party to every international dispute arising anywhere in the world. And it does. It obliges us and all other member nations, for that matter, when called upon, to commit troops to keeping the peace, i.e. waging war. Because, you see, in the George Orwellian world of the United Nations, peace really does mean war. War is peace. That was one of the mantras from 1984. War means the absence of all opposition, and the only way to get rid of opposition is to crush it out by bombing people into oblivion that won't come along with you little scam. That's all this means, folks. That is literally what they're saying when they talk about peace. You either agree to our little scams, you go along with our little sellout deals, if you're a leader of a country, you know, it isn't part of the club yet, you let us come in and rape and pillage your people, enslave your country into debt, sell out your country completely to our interests, we'll take care of you, the sellout leader. We'll make sure you're cozy and cushioned nicely and make sure your diapers are changed on a regular basis so you don't get a little diaper rash on your butt. And we'll pamper you with, little powder there. Just go along with us. If you don't, we'll either send the CIA in to orchestrate a coup or an assassination, or we'll simply bomb you off the map. One way or another, though, you're going to play our game. That's what the UN is all about. That's what the U.S. is all about, who's been fighting on behalf of the UN, again, ever since World War II. This same man I just quoted from, J. Reuben Clark, Jr., then went on to say, quote, "Not only does the charter organization, the UN, not prevent future wars, but it makes it practically certain that we shall have future wars. And as such wars, it takes from us, the U.S., the power to declare them, to choose the side on which we shall fight, to determine what forces and military equipment we shall use in war, and to control and command our sons and daughters who do the fighting." Now notice, you know, some people will say, "Oh, wait a minute, that's not true in Iraq. They didn't want us to go in Iraq." No. The ones who didn't want us to go into Iraq were a certain few inspectors at the UN who either did have a conscience and really believed in peace and negotiations, and didn't know that the boys at the highest rungs of the ladder at the UN actually wanted war, or they're just playing a sleazy little political mind game with us, giving the appearance as though they're against war but really are for it. In any case, it doesn't matter. The UN, of course, shortly after we went into Iraq, remember, there was talk, maybe we should step back now and let the UN come in. But of course, once the UN saw it was such a big mess over there, they figured, oh no, wait a minute, you guys get things under control, bomb the nation into compliance, you know, destroy its entire infrastructure and bring to total chaos, then kill off all the ones that can pose us any threat. Then, you know, once you get the place settled down, then we'll come in and we'll occupy the country. You know, that's basically what's going on here, guys. Our soldiers today are cannon fodder in this monstrous machine. Other good examples of the UN waging war through U.S. military forces or with the aid of U.S. military supplies are Katanga in the early 1960s and Somalia in the early 1990s. But let's single out one particular notorious example: the Persian Gulf War in Iraq in 1991, so that we can take a close look at how these UN-embraced conflicts actually play out. That war served as a good case study, serves as a good example of how this whole fiasco actually works. The globalists, those wanting global government, who work behind the scenes controlling the UN, and the U.S. for that matter, and Britain, and a whole lot of other countries around the world, simply by controlling their economies through the phony central banking systems they have, these globalists targeted this nation, Iraq, back in 1991, not only because they wanted to pressure it into compliance with UN dictates, but also because they wanted to make an example out of it to other potentially resistant countries in the region, that if you go against us, we'll do the same thing to you. We'll obliterate you. You know, we'll wipe you off the map. So, you know, Iraq was kind of an experiment, if you will, to see how they could push their weight around, to see if they could get away with this, and how the other nations in the Arab world, traditionally resistant to outside influence and control, you know, to see how they would respond. In order to justify the massive assault on Iraq that was being planned, the globalists found it necessary to set up Saddam Hussein so that they could get this war in the first place. Thus, just prior to this war, they sent April Glaspie over, who at that time was ambassador to Iraq, U.S. ambassador. And, she said that Bush and Baker, then Secretary of State, James Baker, told her to tell Saddam that the United States, quote, has no vested interests in the Iraq-Kuwait border dispute. By telling that to Saddam, he took it as the go-ahead, or as the green light, if you will, to go ahead with his invasion. This, of course, is just what they had intended. They knew that he would, you know, view that as a nod of approval. Yeah, go ahead and invade Kuwait. We don't care. So naturally, the very next day, that's what he did. He fell into the trap. That's just what Washington wanted. And, of course, he didn't know better. You know, he didn't know what was being done here. He thought the U.S. was his friend because they were supporting him all during the 80s in his war against Iran. Everybody's seen that picture of him shaking Rumsfeld's hand, you know, striking up the weapons deal. You know, they were giving him millions of dollars, sending him all kinds of weapons. Little did he know, though, the game that the U.S. was playing and had been playing with so many other leaders around the world. Shame on him for not seeing what had been going on for decades. You know, this is what they do, folks. It's a dominoes game. Set him up, knock him down. Today's buddy is tomorrow's enemy. You see, they fund these people and send them weapons. Not only are they making money off of this, of course, but they're gaining their next sucker's support and trust so that they can more easily set them up. And that's just what they did. You know, the very weapons that they gave him now became the excuse to want to take him out. Oh, look at that. He's got a big army. He's got all this weaponry. Of course, they deliberately sold him weapons that were way behind ones that they had so that when they went in there, he wouldn't be able to pose that much of a threat to them. But, you know, they could use that as the excuse in the mind of the people around the world. See all these weapons he's got? Unbelievable. But here it was. They set him up by using April Glaspie as a dupe, sent her over there, told him, yep, give him the green light. You know, didn't word it in those words, of course. But, yeah, tell him we have no vested interest in the Kuwait-Iraq border dispute. Knowing that he was going to take that, because, you know, they knew he wanted to invade Kuwait. Iraq had been wanting Kuwait back for a long time. Kuwait had traditionally been a province of Iraq. So Saddam goes in the very next day, and he even expressed shortly afterwards how shocked he was that the U.S. was now warning him. Washington was now, you know, threatening him to get out. He couldn't believe it. He says, what's going on here? They basically told me to go in and invade, and now that I'm doing it, they want to wage war? Poor Saddam didn't know. He was sticking his head in a lion's mouth. He thought he was petting a kitten. Anyway, let's see here. I lost my place in my notes here. Anyway, interestingly, back in the 1980s, guys, as I mentioned, the U.S. had supplied a tremendous amount of financial and military aid to Saddam. Believe it or not, they weren't just supplying Saddam. This was the, you know, Iran-Iraq war. They were actually supplying both sides. That's another game that the U.S. has been playing, along with the U.N., of course, working together behind the scenes. They actually fund both sides of the conflict, but they fund the one that they want to win ultimately more. They did this with the Iran-Contra affair. They weren't just supplying the Contras. They were actually sending supplies to the Sandinistas as well. But, you know, they wanted ultimately the Contras to win, so they sent them more supplies, but they didn't want them to win too quickly, because after all, there's a lot of money to be made from, you know, escapades like this. And not to mention, they got a lot of drugs out of the deal, too. The CIA was bringing in all kinds of contraband into the country, cocaine primarily, with the help of Noriega and Bill Clinton, I might add. You know, that was part of the Iran-Contra scandal. So why, you know, just supply the Contras and have the war end quickly when you can drag this on and use it as a cover to engage in massive international drug trade deals? So that's what was going on there. And they did the same thing again with Iran and Iraq. Why just supply Saddam and have the war end quickly? Why not drag it on? We can make more money and have more fun. And that's just what they did. But you see, they play these guys like fine Stradivarius violins. It's just a big sucker game. As always, though there be other hidden motives behind the playing of such war-waging games, the biggest one of all is the advancement of the globalist UN cause of world government, or the New World Order, which I have made frequent reference to and will continue to do so on this show. That's ultimately what lies behind all of this stuff, guys. Let's take a look at a George Bush Sr. quote from his State of the Union address of January 29th, 1991. This was about a month or so before the invasion of Iraq. And we'll see that the 91 Gulf War was indeed intended as a progressive step toward this goal of the New World Order. Here's what Daddy Bush had to say. For two centuries, referring back to the days of Weishaupt and, you know, his founding of this conspiracy for world domination, he said, "We've done the hard work of freedom, the push for world government, and tonight we lead the world in facing down a threat to decency and humanity. What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order. We have within our reach the promise of a renewed America. We can find meaning and reward by serving some higher purpose than ourselves, a shining purpose, the illumination of a thousand points of light. Join the community of conscience, and the world can therefore seize this opportunity to fulfill the long-held promise of a new world order." Notice, he mentioned that twice in that speech, new world order. You see, this is the insider's buzzword or buzz term for the goal of global domination. He used several other insider terms there, in case you didn't notice. He talked about a thousand points of light. Some of you might recall Dana Carvey on Saturday Night Live years ago picked up on that and you know, made fun of it frequently. A thousand points of light! A thousand points of light! This is actually a term used quite heavily in the occult world of Freemasonry. I have more to say about them on future shows, but basically, it represents all of the workers who belong to various secret societies like Freemasonry, like Skull and Bones, both of which Daddy Bush is and was a prominent member of, as is Junior, who's a big-time member of Skull and Bones. But it's a reference to all of these people working behind the scenes covertly, collaboratively, toward this goal of global government. They consider themselves points of light around the world. So he's sending a message out to his compadres, his thousand points of light friends that, you know, were at the dawning of the birth of this system of global domination that we've been working so hard toward. You know, with his little smirk there, it's like, yeah, everything's right on schedule. It's working brilliantly. The peasants of the world are falling into our hands. I mean, they're sick, guys. That's really their attitude. They just laugh at the gullible saps around the planet that they manipulate like little worker bees, little busy bees, to do their bidding, not knowing, not having the slightest clue what they're actually engaging in. They have them suckered into believing that they're fighting for freedom and justice and democracy, when actually the wars they're waging are bringing them ever closer to complete and total enslavement. It's astonishing how people can be so manipulated like this. Later on in this same speech, Bush also declared, quote, "If we do not follow the dictates of our inner moral compass," yeah, whatever. What do you know about morality, you piece of trash? "And stand up for human life, then his," meaning Saddam's, "lawlessness will threaten the peace and democracy of the emerging new world order." What peace? What democracy? What is he talking about? What a lying fraud artist. "That we now see forming," he says. "This long dreamed of vision we've all worked toward for so long." Who exactly is this we who have been dreaming for this for so long? Not you and I, folks. He's talking about his little billionaire buddies club. It's a dream they have been working for so long, passing on the torch from generation to generation, father to son to grandson to great-grandson, while the public has been snoozing peacefully away, having no idea what's been going on behind the curtain. Well, it's time to pull that curtain aside. Now notice what Stansfield Turner had to say. Council on Foreign Relations member. Ooh, I'll have more to say on them on future shows. Also, former CIA director. Surprise, surprise. The Council on Foreign Relations created the CIA, folks. Every CIA director in history, for that matter, has been a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and a very prominent one at that. Very interesting when you start looking into the Council on Foreign Relations. Most Americans don't even know what it is. Don't even know it exists. What their function is. Start looking into that. Oh, you'll be surprised what you'll stumble into. They run the show, folks. Anyway, here's what he had to say when asked about Iraq and the Gulf War crisis back in 91 on CNN's Crossfire in July of that year. Here's what he said. We have a much bigger objective. We've got to look at the long run here. This is an example. The situation between the United Nations and Iraq. Notice, between the United Nations and Iraq. We were doing the fighting, but the real string pullers behind the curtain, this man says, was the United Nations. It wasn't between the U.S. and Iraq. It's between the United Nations. We were just the errand boys. You know, there's been many servicemen over the years who have absolutely refused to fight under the auspice of the UN. They said, no way, I'm a United States soldier. I'm fighting for the United States. If you're going to tell me I have to wear, a UN insignia, you can forget it. And they've gotten quite a bad rap over that. But they're right, folks. This is what's going on. Anyway, he continues here, between the United Nations and Iraq, where the United Nations is deliberately intruding into the sovereignty of a sovereign nation. Now, this is a marvelous precedent, he says, to be used in all countries of the world. Understand who's talking here. Some paranoid conspiracy theorist. This isn't someone who is theorizing, not having a clue what's going on. This man is a prominent member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and he was a former CIA director. He says, this is a marvelous precedent that the UN is interfering with other nations' sovereignty. And how is it doing it again? Through us, having us doing its bidding for it. And he says that it's one that is going to be repeated all around the world. What do you think we're doing right now in Iraq again? What do you think we're doing in Afghanistan? Some people say, well, wait a minute, there's no conspiracy. It was a conspiracy. They wouldn't be back in Iraq again. They would have done it right the first time. Oh, no, no, you just don't get it. You just don't get it. You see, all they wanted to do was knock Saddam down to size. Like I said, it was an experiment. They were hoping to see if this was going to cause Saddam to break and give in, and if it was going to have the domino effect and cause other Arab nations to cave in. It didn't work. It was a complete flop. So they had to go back in and this time do it right. Take out Saddam, take control of that country, get control of the oil reserves so that nobody could undersell them by, you know, releasing those reserves to the world, driving the price of oil down. And it's worked brilliantly, hasn't it? Because since they've gone in there, Saddam can't undersell them. And now look at the price of oil right now. What is it, $95, $96 a barrel? Ooh, the boys at ExxonMobil are rubbing their fists together so much they're almost catching on fire. And so they had to go in and take Saddam out because the plan didn't work. And now they're sending a very strong message to other Arab leaders. Conform or we're going to do the same thing to you. Iran hasn't caught on. So now they're going to go in there, folks. And in doing that, they're hoping that the message is going to be caught, picked up pretty quickly by other Arab countries. Wow. They're going through one after another, after another, after another. We better cave in. You look at Gaddafi already did. Libya is kissing some real royal butt. They just shelled out several $1 billion a few years ago. And, you know, Gaddafi even admitted later that, you know, he confessed to the downing of flight, you know, Pan Am 103 there in Lockerbie back in 87. Something he had nothing to do with, or actually I think it was 89. Or 88, I forget what year it was. Anyway, folks, he had nothing to do with it. Libya had no connection whatsoever with it. That was another CIA farce job. But he confessed to it because, quite frankly, he was so overwhelmed with, you know, between the sanctions and the constant threat of more invasions, you know, especially with the war on terror beginning. That was the final straw for him. Now, all of a sudden, he's a buddy of the Bush administration because he learned how to... You see the game that's going on? I hope you do now, if you didn't before. And understand, it's the UN playing it, baby, not just the U.S. In fact, again, the U.S. is the puppet. The UN is the puppeteer. Don't think for one minute that George Bush and the UN are at odds with each other. Anytime that seems to be the case, that's all it is. It just seems to be the case. They're working for the same crime bosses. They might appear on the surface at times to be against each other just to sucker you. Think about it. If he's really against the UN, why was it that one of the first things he did after stealing the White House, after the first rigged election in 2000, that he signed the United States back onto UNESCO? Reagan took us off back in the early 80s. Why would he sign us back onto UNESCO if he was so against the UN? Why would he have wide open borders, something else the UN is very big on? Why would he embrace trade deals with the WTO and other UN-sanctioned agencies? In fact, WTO operates under the auspices of the UN. It doesn't just sanction it. It's part of the UN. It's an arm of the UN. Yeah, Bush is against the UN, all right. And the moon is made of flipping cheese. One of the many outrages that occurred, guys, during the 1991 Gulf conflict was the bombing raid that occurred after Iraq had surrendered. The troops that had gone in over the border into Kuwait were now fleeing that country in civilian vehicles, about 100,000 of them. I remember this is a front page article, front page news story in Time back in about a year later, I think it was in the summer of 92, but they did it was covered, it was the summer of 91. The story didn't come out until several months later, but they broke the story of how after Iraq had surrendered, after the troops were leaving Kuwait, at this point they were unarmed. They were reduced to civilian status. And even though they were harmless, all they were doing is going home. They were in civilian vehicles. Daddy Bush sent out orders for the caravan on its way back on the road to Basra to be bombed into oblivion. That's exactly what they did. This is an international war crime, ladies and gentlemen, crime against humanity. They estimate about 100,000 Iraqi civilians, because that's what they were at that point, were mass slaughtered. Where was the UN when that was going on? I'll tell you where they were. They were right at the helm of the whole thing, giving orders to do this. Why? You know, isn't it amazing? Why didn't the UN complain about that if they're supposed to be the bastions of freedom and justice and human rights? Oh, BS. We better snap out of it, folks, and stop falling for this propaganda. They're suckering you back and front, left and right, up and down, and all around, baby. This whole thing is a scam. This country better wake out of its coma, man. We can't afford to let another 5 minutes go by with these scoundrels in power. We need to have immediate impeachment proceedings and bring them before a grand jury. Snap out of it, America. I really wish I could just, in one swing, just slap this country upside the head. Wake up, you stupid fools. Turn off the blonde bimbos from Hollywood and the, you know, maybe turn off the football games, too. Nothing against football, but, you know, if it's just serving as a distraction to keep our attention on what's going on, kick the boob tubes out the window. Nothing but propaganda, diversions, corruptions of the mind, so that you don't know what's going on. And then all the while, they got you pumped up with Prozac and Ritalin and all other kinds of psychotropic dope. It's all by design, people. Those drugs were designed. Oh, I got a show coming up on that sometime. Rip the lid off of that fiasco. These drugs were designed not to cure psychoses, but to create them. To numb you up, dumb you down, and dope you up so you don't know what's going on. And apparently, it's working quite well. Unbelievable. The thief is broken in your house. He's raided your safe. He's stolen your friggin' mattress right underneath you as you're sleeping, took your TV, already grabbed your wife, she's out tied up in the van, and he's waving to you out the door and you're smiling as he leaves. I mean, that's what's going on here. They've raped and pillaged us. And we're just, oh, hey, how's it going? Nice to see you. Take care. Close the door on the way out. Saps. Fools. Suckers. I'm ashamed to travel in other countries and call myself an American. It's embarrassing. It's disgusting. There's people in third world countries who can see what's going on, and we can't? Well, mainly because they've been targets of these fiascos. But come on, folks, these are supposed to be uneducated people. Let me tell you, they got a much better grasp than what most PhDs in this country have of what's going on around the world. Oh, then there was the problem of the UN embraced sanctions that went on after the Gulf War. Once again, where was the UN to stop this mass murder of Iraqis? Do you know how many Iraqis died in the 90s as a result of the sanctions? The sanctions were imposed by the UN and enforced by the U.S., as always. The UN calls the shots, the U.S. carries them out. You know how many people died in Iraq from 1991 up to 2003? Of course, many more have died since 2003 with the second Gulf War. But just from the sanctions, after the war had ended, it didn't really end, it just assumed a different form. But just from the sanctions, after the Gulf War up until 2003, when the next bombardment began of Iraq, 1.5 million Iraqis died. One third of them, a full 500,000, were children. Madeleine Albright was asked, do you think it's worth it, the death of 500 Iraqi children? You know what she said? Yeah, I think it's worth it. Of course. Cha-ching! Oh, lots of money was being made out of that fiasco. Not to mention the old power grab game was continuing. Do you see what absolute psychopaths we have in power? Or are you going to continue to remain in denial? Roll back over, smother yourself with that pillow, throw a shoe at the alarm clock to shut it up so you can go back to sleep in your little coma, your little happy fantasy world. Well, let me tell you, there's only a few more trips left to McDonald's and a few more football games and soap operas to watch before this country goes straight to hell. It's already pretty much there now as it is. But they're going to finish the job as long as we sit back and continue to keep our heads wedged up our hind parts. Better get yourself a nice crowbar and a good, industrial-strength jar of Vaseline to get your head out of your hind parts, folks. And face reality, what's going on here. America, you'd better stop what's happening because you are going to wind yourselves up very soon because of your apathy under the most tyrannical system of government the world has ever known. That's where we're going, and we're going there fast. The Gulf War, an international cooperative effort to force a nation to comply with UN resolutions, brilliantly demonstrates what the UN was really intended for, guys, from the very beginning. Unchallengeable global power. As we see revealed in this next quote from an NEA publication, National Education Association publication, something else controlled by the globalist boys. Oh, yeah, they got their fingers all over that. The education system is gone. I'll have more to say about that on future shows. Anyway, this dated back to, actually, to 1948. It was a NEA publication called Education for International Understanding in American Schools. Nice little propaganda piece talking about where education was going in coming decades, how they want to make American kids, indoctrinate them into the idea of globalism, globalization. Listen to this. It said, the idea has become established that the preservation of international peace and order may require that force be used to compel a nation to conduct its affairs with the framework of an established world system. Did you catch that? It may require that force be used to compel a nation to conduct its affairs within the framework of an established world system. The world government. It may be necessary to force them, to bomb them, so that they go along with us if we can't coerce them or bribe them otherwise, or rig their elections sufficiently. The quote goes on, "The most modern expression of this doctrine of collective security is the United Nations Charter." There you go. Way back in the mid-40s, they were talking about this, guys, how the UN Charter was the catalyst to set up world government. In their own words, they tell you. You don't have to wonder and speculate if the UN was intended as a catalyst for world government from the beginning. They tell you. You just gotta listen. It goes on. "Many persons believe that enduring peace cannot be achieved so long as the nation-state system continues as at present constituted. Enduring peace cannot be obtained until the nation-state surrenders to a world organization." There you go. "In order to have their total control of the world, all nations must submit to our power. And if they don't, we'll bubble up the map. We don't care how many people we kill, how much misery we create. The more misery, the better. It will make them more compliant with our dictates." You thought Hitler died years ago? Oh, his spirit is very much alive. And those who hold the reins of power today are entirely possessed of that spirit, in case you haven't noticed. Every day is Halloween in this George Orwellian world we live in, folks. And it's not just masks they're wearing. That's their real face. That hideous-looking beast that you behold when you see that scoundrel coming on the TV set giving his little national address. Of course, he's not the source of the evil. He's just one of the little minions. But he loves what's going on. He doesn't care how much misery is imposed on you. And then, you know, this is the same guy who said, "We've got to take Saddam out of power. He's living in luxury, sitting on a gold-laden throne while his people are starving." Yeah, what's going on in this country right now? No money to help the poor, to build up America's infrastructures, to build up jobs. Heck, they're sending jobs overseas by the millions. But plenty of money to send over to Iraq to fill Halliburton's coffers. $60 for a six-pack of Coke. There's people, heck, there's veterans on the streets today that can't even afford a meager apartment, never mind a house. No money to help them, but plenty of money to give to Halliburton. But Saddam had the audacity to sit on a gold throne while people were starving. Well, let me tell you, there's people starving in Iraq today, that's for sure. Far more than anything they claimed existed under Saddam's watch. That country's a living hell right now. No running water in Baghdad. Disease is spreading rapidly. Somebody, you got to pinch me and tell me this is just a bad dream. I, the worst part of this bad dream, again, it's not so much what they're doing right now. It's that nobody in this country cares. The intended function of the UN set forth in this last quote from the NEA Journal has unfortunately already become a reality, folks. And as time progresses, this reality is becoming ever more frightening. Today we are indeed seeing force being used to compel nations to conduct themselves within the framework of the established world system. It is now possible for a country to incite the wrath of the UN simply by refusing to comply with just about any demand that it places upon it by the Security Council. As the preceding New York Times quote confirms, listen to this one. Let's see here. New York Times had to say this. The UN Security Council widened its definition of what constitutes a threat to peace and security in today's world, saying this now includes proliferation of all weapons of mass destruction, as well as non-military sources of instability in the economic, social, humanitarian, and ecological fields. Such language seems to cover just about anything that could go wrong in the present-day world. So a more politically intrusive United Nations may be the real price that the world must pay if it wants few conflicts and smaller peacekeeping bills in the future. Did you catch that? Here's the New York Times actually calling for increasing the power of the UN, and they're saying that we can expect to see a lot more of this intruding into nations' affairs. And you know, there's going to be a price that we have to pay. We either give money to the UN and support it now, or ultimately we're going to have a bigger price to pay later. You see how they're hyping you up? And this is supposed to be the paper opposed to George Bush, but look at the alternative that they're offering you, folks. It's the same game. It's still global government. It's just one run by the UN instead of George Bush. Well, what's the difference when it's the same people funding them behind the curtain? It's the Wall Street cartellers, the London cartellers, the international banking fraudsters. I mean, it's unbelievable. Pick which side of the coin you like best. Same coin. But look what we're offering you. You've got the head, you've got the tail. Crap comes out both ends, but hey, at least it's a different shade of crap. Oh, consider also the following relevant quote, this one from Kofi Annan, the former UN Secretary General. Here's what he had to say. It is important to define UN intervention as broadly as possible, to include actions along a wide continuum from the most pacific to the most coercive. You see what he's saying here? He's programming the dumbed-down, doped-up fools, not only in this country, but on a global scale, to become accustomed to the UN intervening. Sometimes we'll do it in a more peaceful fashion. We'll caress and embrace world leaders who play our little ball game and allow us to go in and rape and pillage their countries and steal their resources and drive the people further into poverty. Those who don't, will bomb them. But either way, we're going to intervene. And we're going to get our little puppet masters, like in New York, or should I say in Washington, to do our bidding for us, to sucker their gullible population into thinking they're fighting for world peace when all they're doing is pushing out tyrannical edicts. Oh, boy. You know, after a while, you keep reading quotes like this over and over and over from the most authoritative sources, and you just want to slap the people who say you're paranoid, you don't know what you're talking about. You want to slap them. They're mindless fools. Here's another quote. This is from the UN Charter. And you can tell what's been going on is right in line with it. This is from Article 1, Section 2, Chapter 1. It says that the UN's purpose is, quote, to develop friendly relations among nations and to take other appropriate measures to strengthen international i.e., absence of opposition, to take other appropriate measures. Now, that can mean anything they want it to. Of course, like war. Look at its history, guys. As I said, 62 military conflicts between 1945 and 2002. That the UN has been involved in. Does that sound like a peace-waging or a war-waging institution? That's more than one war per year. But should you still have any questions as to what is meant by these other appropriate measures, listen carefully to the next few quotes. And it looks like I only got a couple of minutes here. I'll try to whip through this really quick. Okay, guys, I just got word. I guess we are going to finish. I thought we were going to 8:28 tonight, but I only got about a half a minute left. So I guess I'll finish it up there for tonight. I'll pick up next week with these quotes. You don't want to miss it, guys. I tell you, when you look at what's really behind this, you quote from the horse's mouth, so to speak. There's no denying it. We're in the middle of a massive conspiracy for global domination. So I'll end there for tonight. We'll pick up there next week. Take care.